This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Tech Thursday. My name is Jeff Sandhu. Welcome to the show. And with me today is the boys and Anusha Kandasivan from Digital News Asia, Karamjit Singh, and also Chong Jin Soon. Anu, let's start with your two of your stories. It's all about the property sector. Recently, you attended the Let's Jam at GEM, which is the Global Entrepreneurship Movement.
Yep.
It's a panel session that focused on the prop tech and also the future of real estate sector.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently, there's like a great potential in the prop tech market.
Yeah, great potential because there's... Honestly, there's not a lot happening technology, digital technology-wise in prop tech, in property market right now in Malaysia. When we say prop tech, a lot of people think about places like iProperty.com.my.
I just think of the apps where you can look for a home and
So that is prop tech.
Okay.
But then you have to think that there's a lot of things that go on behind, as like in the background as well. So technology can be applied in construction, in infrastructure, in property management, you know, all kinds of things.
So it's the whole chain itself.
Yeah, it's the whole chain. So there is a lot of room to provide, one of the panelists said, there's a lot of room to provide seamless experience from the moment the design of the property is being created, you can use technology for that, to the moment that the buyer gets the key. And the, you know, the title transfers.
Or maybe in the future you don't even need a key.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, I mean, key is in like, it could be anything. Right? It could, digital key. Yeah. And the title transfers, you can, technically, you could even transfer the title and sign electronically.
Wow.
It's just that, you know, now in Malaysia, you don't really do that because people still want to see your signature there, you know, legal tech and all that.
Yeah, but you need blockchain. For that future to happen, you need blockchain.
Yeah, so
there you go. I said it, man. Yeah. The hot buzzword. This is the in-show to listen to in tech, man.
Hashtag blockchain. So that is one of the things the panel did talk about as well, that in the future, blockchain could, of course, be applied to property, right? Because, you know, everybody knows that data on blockchain is immutable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you transfer titles over the blockchain, then yeah, why not?
And who was part of this panel session?
Okay, so let's see. There were Michael Cho, who is the IFCA MSC Berhad Chief Executive Officer, Malaysian PropTech Association Deputy President Elizabeth Siu, Masing Group Berhad Group Strategy Operations Director Lionel Young, and IT Solutions Company B Networks Chief Executive Officer Tharma Indran.
Right.
So we had people from a lot of different areas.
Good
of
like cross section, yeah.
Yeah, and the panel was moderated by Proficio co-founder Dr. Siva Balan.
Who's in Europe right now on vacation.
How do you know all this, Akar? Do you have a tracker on him or something?
Yes. Well, I need to know where, who is
Dr.
where,
Siva
what,
is
why.
One of Karam's BFFs. So,
I really don't like it when she says that.
He feels very uncomfortable when you just say BFF immediately. Like. But for the consumer side and all, it's a bit slow moving in the prop tech.
Yeah, it's, okay, here's the thing. So actually in the developer side, Masing and the other guys were saying that developer side, they are taking their own sweet time. They're thinking about how they're going to do their digital transformation and how they're going to incorporate digital technology in their property management and all of that. They're moving slowly. And one of the reasons is because they don't really have to move fast. There are a few big players and they're all moving slowly together. So nobody's like...
Is it because we're not hungry? You know?
I'm
sure we would get into this because we're large consumers.
Well, I guess there is not a lot of pressure from the outside, from outside Malaysia, not yet. But like Elizabeth said, China is coming. So we gotta pull up our socks.
Ni hao ma.
Also sticking with that though, because talking about this, there isn't one player who's really pushing the space. Mm. But iProperty, they recently just launched their new state of the art office. In Malaysia. So what's about that? What's state of the art about this new office?
Super awesome office, like super nice and open and airy and. It's all about collaboration, basically.
Okay.
There's a lot of spaces for collaboration. A lot of it's dynamic in the sense that, you work in groups together. So like the IT department work together and the whatever department, the marketing department work together.
They've always worked together.
But then there's space for somebody from IT to move over to marketing for just a day to work with them.
Oh.
And there's that kind of thing. It's like
it's like a modular
business unit collaboration.
So the reason for this is because it's sort of the bigger picture is that this is how iProperty.com.my and RA Group, which has bought over iProperty a few years ago.
From Australia, RA Group. Rupert Murdoch. I'm going to say
so, RA Group.
Another one of your BFFs? Yeah.
he wishes.
That one, I wish.
So RA Group Asia, that's how they work. Okay. So RA Group is enormous. They own like so many of these property sites all over the world. Right. They have a global network. Yeah. And so it's basically what I spoke to Henry Ruiz, the CEO of RA Group Asia, and he said that's how the whole network works. So everybody can work with everybody else. You can leverage on each other's experience because there are other property sites in other countries besides Malaysia which are more experienced. They've been around for like 20 years or something. So, you know, people, they know more of what's going on. So, and that's, he was actually talking about reinvesting in your own assets. So, he said reinvest in Malaysia because that's how you can leverage on the experience and on the skills that and the revenue that the other groups have, the other property sites have, put back into Malaysia, which can accelerate Malaysia's growth, as in iProperty.com, my growth, like accelerate it 5 years into the future.
But they're
like
going
in
into
a very small.
They're also going into new markets, right? REA Group itself, as well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're also looking to expand.
They're looking to take over the world, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All the time, right? No, I think even 3 years ago, when I met the lady out of Australia, she was saying that their vision is that because they've got a global presence even back then, the idea is that so somebody from Malaysia, if you're interested to buy a property in Mexico, you can already do that from here, right?
Yes.
And of course, then like technology, like whether mixed reality or virtual reality, will help you get a better sense of the property. And you're dealing with a trusted puppy, party, right? REA Group, puppy, are we going to talk about that pet site later?
No.
So interesting you said about VR and AI. So what they said something very interesting, which I find interesting. They're growing on mobile, which is, I mean, not surprising, but they're also concurrently growing on desktop people who are looking at property, they want to see video and photos in the biggest format possible. So that's why they use desktop. So it's one of the few industries, I would say, that there's growing both in mobile and desktop at the same time.
All right, Jin, we will talk about your trip to Hong Kong after this. We'll be right back.
Ni hao, man.
As they hope.
Ni hao.
See, you're getting a lesson already.
Yeah, man. Ni hao.
Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and Chong Jin Sing will be right back. BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Tech Thursday. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and Chong Jin Seung, who's just got back from Hong Kong. You went to the Hong Kong Electronics Fair Spring Edition 2018. Sounds like a fashion runway show, Spring Edition. Didn't know Electronics Fair had a Spring Edition, Winter Edition. And
Well, actually, because this fair is actually organized by the HKTDC, the Hong Kong Trade Development Council. So they invited us over, and they have two shows basically because technology changes so fast so that it warrants two shows, which is, I think, unique in a way because I think most Western shows, like your CES, is just one for the year and that's it already.
Actually, you could do an electronics expo every month because like so many things come out within the
month.
But
the unique thing also about this electronics fair is because there are a lot of original equipment manufacturers, OEMs, so there are like thousands and rows of them in halls full of like anything from your Bluetooth speakers, your wires, your power banks, your mice and everything.
I always find these expos, right, is the place where you can find some cool items, but mostly it's the very weird ones and the very strange looking ones. And then they're always there. Like the cool ones are like, one or two. Sure. But most of them are the weird and cool.
Which is good one. It means people's entrepreneurs' creativity on display, right?
Yeah, sometimes just scratch your head and go like, why does this exist?
Exactly,
like, So what tickled your interest then? Like, so what were the cool things?
So funny thing, you did mention that, you know, there's innovation and stuff happening, and they are actually, for a large part, they have moved away from just having OEMs there, so they also invited some startups there. So a couple of the interesting ones are actually from startups. Let me just start with the weirdest one first. Since we're on the topic of weird.
You just get it out of the way. And then I want to erase my memory of this.
No, I don't need to erase it. Okay, but this is basically okay, like, I'm a parent myself, like, but then this would have been a cool tech to have at home during my wife's pregnancy. But this is basically a, you know, the ultrasound machines in the hospital? Mm-hmm. So like actually they kind of miniaturize it and make it portable into a small tiny handheld device that you can put, you know, the ultrasound gel on and then you just rub over the
DIY.
Tummy. DIY. And you link it with an app. Well, yeah, I don't think it shows any radiation. Ultrasound doesn't use any radiation. But you link it with an app, and then you can see in real time.
Wow.
And you basically can take baby's first selfie in the womb and take
that
a 10-second clip.
Is that how they marketed it? Baby's first picture.
No. They should, though.
They should. But they didn't. But they make it more of like, this is a fun medical thing. Oh, sorry, I forgot. It's called the Marvoto Fetus Camera M1. So that's the name of the thing.
Fetus camera.
Because you are looking at the fetus as it's developing.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's not cheap. $2,000.
Okay.
Wow.
It's a pretty price, but they say it's a niche market, and probably all those rich people want to see their kids before they're born and have like pictures.
I have a problem with that already. So you spent $2,000 on something that you could only use maybe once or twice.
Depending on
how many kids you're gonna have, right?
You sell it like goes on Muda, you sell it, or you rent it out to your friends. Oh, you're pregnant, great, yeah. You can use this for 5 months, right?
For $2,000 though.
Charge you $200.
But this is, I think, the first of its kind. And you know, when I guess there are more players, then prices will go down, right?
Sure.
So the weirdest one is out of the way.
The weirdest one is out of the way.
Any other weird ones that you want to get out of the way as well before
this
we go to the
so
cool
weird,
ones?
It's not so weird, but it's kind of cool. You know 3D printing, right?
Yeah.
We all know about 3D printing. Right. Usually you require huge ass, big machines that you got to like big square boxes.
Yep.
This, however, is really small and portable. Mm-hmm. And you print it from your mobile phone or tablet.
Oh, wow.
So what this technology does, I do not have the exact scientific name for how it happens, but basically you have like a small plate that you can put your phone underneath and you fill the top part, so your plate, sorry, your phone's underneath, the device holds like a small sort of a plate on top of it, which you pour resin in. So most normal 3D printing uses like physical plastic resins, and you have one yourself, right? A sort of a pen device like that, so you normally load the plastic in. This is a liquid form, and it uses what it called, so I forgot the term for it, but it's like a UV. Normal 3D printers usually need to shine a laser and use UV in order to like, you know, form an object, so that laser point just goes around and it forms it from the bottom up. So this one actually sort of pulls the entire 3D object out and the light spectrum from the phone to like form the different parts of the 3D object.
Wow.
So this guy is actually, so I forgot to mention, this is actually called the T3D 3D printer.
And T3D 3D printer.
Yeah, the T3D actually stands for Taiwan 3D Tech.
Okay.
Not the most eloquently named, but it's a Taiwanese startup, and it's actually targeted towards architecture or design students or those who want to use it, and it costs about $400 for this.
That's a lot better.
It's a lot better, and you can experiment with it, and it's even modular in design. So like you can even print like multiple colors. So like, think of like your Lazy Susan. You plant this on one side, and then you have your Lazy Susan, like different looks like petri dishes, but actually the resins in it. So you can like form it up with different colors like red, blue, green, and then like have multicolored rainbow colored object. And they showed me some of the 3D objects. So there was a Triceratops, a tiny printed Triceratops, and it was really detailed. You can see the teeth even.
Oh wow.
So it's like very detailed. Very detailed 3D printer.
So 3D printer, we got ultrasound, we got 3D printer.
And maybe something...
We have a rocket to Mars or something now?
Not yet. But then, Jeff, you're a gamer yourself, right?
Yes, yeah.
So this next one is probably...
No time, but
no time. But this one, probably, if you're a PUBG player... So this is... this devices would definitely help you get your chicken dinners or, you know, get first place in this Battle Royale games. So this...
Karam is scratching, wondering...
He's scratching his idea.
What is chicken dinner meaning?
You have to look it up. You've got to look it up. But basically, these devices by GameSir, so I'll start with the X1 Battle Dock. Sounds really, really impressive. But it's a really simple device that you can dock your smartphone or a tablet on top. And underneath it is where the brains and the magic happens. So you're able to plug in your gaming keyboard, mm-hmm. your gaming mouse, mm-hmm. and
oh, wow.
with some software inside, you can map out the buttons, all the touch buttons on your iPad or your smartphone of the interface.
So you can use your own mechanical keyboard, yes, exactly. and gaming mouse that you use for your desktop on,
exactly.
this, on wow. your iPads and yeah. your tablets and your phones.
It's a full-on PC experience on your tablet. Wow. So I imagine they're trying to cater to this market.
Yeah.
And you know, people are going to buy it because this game is so popular. So like they're really banking on it. Oh. And even if you're not doing it, there's mm-hmm. another one called the Z1 Gaming Pad, which builds in a keypad together with it. And they are Cherry MX red switches, mind you. So like they are the typical type that you find.
I find this market will grow really fast because there are a lot of developers who are actually working on mobile games.
Exactly.
But then you have the limitation with what you can do with the screen
yeah.
and
yeah.
It's difficult. There's so many buttons and controls that you can put it on the on,
so it's
on a small
so complicated
device.
You gotta put it on the buttons this way anyway and it works anyway.
And
but,
these peripherals have been around for a very long time, but they are not very compatible. But now I think they're working a lot more closely because they have
a built-in devices have been, I think they were released earlier this year during CES.
Mm.
Yeah, some of them won awards.
Mm.
And they're fairly inexpensive. Like the X1 BattleDock is only $50, whereas the Z1 gaming keyboard is about $95 or $96.
That's
so like,
right.
if you want to win a PUBG, then probably these devices are for you.
All right, so three items. That's
three
the only
items.
Thing.
Well,
nothing
I think
else.
That's, I right. think I said my piece.
But you met a local company in Hong Kong, and they're trying to tackle the need of constantly being connected.
Yes, correct. So
Phone Bud is that
Phone Bud?
Right.
But
phone
Bud
phone
IoT.
As in the phone.
Yes,
phone.
They've been around for a while actually, and interestingly, they are founded by Karam's four BFFs. So they are made of Dixon Chiu of Panasonic Holdings, Sunny Kuei of Sunview, Dato' Lai Yit Lung of Silterra, and Chan Ki Siak of Exabytes.
So Digirati 50. Yeah.
Also Digirati 50. Sunny Kuei was over in Hong Kong, and he was launching actually the Phone Bud W, which is a new IoT device.
Mm.
What it does is actually, your power bank?
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically a power bank merged together with your Wi-Fi hotspot that you normally you would have to rent overseas.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Mm. So actually, it only costs $149, and for that, it's the price of the device. But within it, you can buy, it's packaged together, you can actually buy like a mobile plan for the device, and you can roam across over 90 different countries.
Whoa.
Basically, you told me you can, if you cross all five continents of the world, probably you can use this in one country or another.
And there's a monthly fee and stuff like that. It's just like a normal plan then.
There is. So like the prices start at about $5 for 1 gigabyte of data, depending on the country.
Yeah.
So some may vary. Five is really the minimum.
Yeah. Right.
And then like it can go up to $8.
Mm-hmm.
And that data lasts for 90 days. Which is pretty good, I would say, because I did some research on a couple others, and most of them may last you about a month or so, but this is like 90 days, it's 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really no problem. Like, say, if Karan were to go somewhere and uses the Phone Bud W, and like he's done with it, and he still access data, he just pass on to me or whoever else, and then they can use
and
the
this will
next.
Work great for Karan, because it's not only a data that gives you data, it gives you, it's a power bank as well, right? Because his phone always dies. So it's
a two-in-one
for Karan. I'm here, right?
And not only that, it's wireless charging too. So it's got key charging as
cool,
well.
Man.
Mm. So it works on your iPhone X and your Samsung devices. So like, you're pretty much covered.
All right. So it's Phone Bud W.
Phone Bud W.
But
it should be out in
the
summer.
2018 way of spelling phone. F-Y-E.
Yeah. It should be out in June 2018, and probably you can check it out then.
All right. We'll be right back with more. Karamjit, you had an interview with Sri.
Disruptor, man.
With a disruptor. Yeah. Ah, right. Okay. We'll have that discussion in just a moment. You're listening to Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Tech Thursday. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and Chon Jin Seung. Karam, you actually came into the office 2 days ago.
Correct.
Not because you wanted to be early for today's show, because you were still late, even though you came in 2 days ago, but because you brought in Srinivas Gautam Naini. He's the CEO of ADA, and
Correct.
They stand for Analytics, Data, and Advertising, and
Correct.
It's also in that particular order.
Yes.
They are part of the Axiata Digital, and they're focused on integrated digital marketing business, which combines data science, technology, and creativity for brands and businesses in Asia. And everything, according to him, will be automated in the world of advertising.
Correct, it's, which is scary, right? So that's why I think, you, and you, when you listen to the recording, you know, I've already said some things about how, you know, it just really scared me listening to him, you know.
The hair on the back of your neck was standing.
Exactly, because this is really talking about disruption. But when you listen to the clip, the big picture is this, because, you know, how fast, you know, and you always say that information now moves at the speed of thought, right? It, it's just so fast. So speed is already a de facto of today's day and age, which also means that they said apparently on social media, right, and he says that the lifespan of content is like only 2 weeks or whatever. So as advertisers, if you want to latch on to a hot trend and you're cleverly weaving your message, you know it's going to get viral and people are going to, you know, listen to your message. So
you've got to be fast.
So your typical, you know, your creative agency cannot come back to you after 21 days. Yeah, this is the pitch, how we're going to do it. Then you have meetings and all. All that is going to be, right? They're still going on now. So they want to disrupt, you know, the whole value chain, which is quite scary. So you want to listen to this and just come away saying, wow, things are really changing. We may not feel it yet, but they are changing, and companies are being disruptive. And this is a telco, right? Axiata Digital. They have been disrupted by the large internet companies, so they've adapted to that. So for them, having been disrupted, they are now doing the disruption, right? It's a fantastic, crazy space out there. You all need to be on your toes, you know, in whatever space you're in.
They want to grow from $100 million revenue to $1 billion US revenue in 3 years'
time. In 1,000 days, right? This US dollars, right? This is a and this is the scale of their hunger. And you would think big companies will work slow because, hey, we're comfortable. You know, the parent company is making so much. But they've got this hunger, this aggressiveness, just like they were a startup. So it's quite astounding.
And you started off by asking him, why are they going after the entire value chain of the advertising industry?
Watch out, media buyers, man.
Yeah, so I think very simplistically, the whole advertising value chain has only been disrupted in one end of the segment. Okay. And that's the Facebooks, Amazons, and Googles.
Yes.
And they have only disrupted the publisher world as far as we see. And there is some play in the whole ad serving market. The traditional agency, which is on the media planning side, on the creative side, has not been disrupted at all. There is a lot of room to actually go and disrupt that. And that's where we think the next $1 billion value for us to capture is. Very simplistically, if you look at the market landscape today, only the top 50 advertisers have moved 30 to 40% of their budgets on AdX to digital. If you look at the next 100 or 250 advertisers in most market, they're only 3 to 5% of the market to digital.
Wow, interesting.
They've hardly moved. Okay. So, and this represents your retail industries, your local CPG, FMCG clients, your education, your healthcare companies, etc. Nobody's going after those guys. Wow. And we think with a very data-driven approach is where we can solve problems for them.
I guess, which is why you've got 180 data specialists in the company, right?
Yeah,
That's a lot of geeks, man.
Absolutely. So we have, I think, three kinds of people who come into our company. Essentially, data science geeks who love data and actually want to play with data and actually work with data across the whole advertising value chain. Growth hackers who really believe in actually driving growth for our advertisers and our brands. And actually, third thing is what I would call frustrated advertising men and women who are frustrated in the traditional world of advertising, but see the opportunity of data on our side and want to join us. So roughly, we are about 180 digital specialists, but we plan to go to 500 within the next 2 to 3 years.
Really? Yeah? You're probably even more than that. So basically, it's interesting. You've got the database, I think you told me, of 300 million, you know, customers, right? And you're trying to create a 360 view of them. And basically, when you have created this Shangri-La picture of Karamjit or Frida or Anusha, you're going to be able to help brands out there reach us if, you know, the segment they're targeting, you know, fits the profile or who we are, right?
Yeah, so that's correct. So today, I guess, to be precise, we have 280 million customer profiles. Typically, for each profile, we scrape about 200 attributes for that profile.
It's per profile.
Wow. So typically, we process on a monthly basis close to 50 billion records. But I think, I again, have to be slightly careful here. Okay. Uh, the So it's not just data from a targeting perspective, but it is more about how do we use data for creative development? How do we use data for media planning, et cetera? This is where we see the opportunity. I mean, Facebook is, and maybe I have to be kosher here in terms of what I say, but Facebook allows targeting based on customer personas and profiles. But it is how do we use for media planning and creative is what we are most excited about. That's where we feel the traditional agencies are not doing enough.
Which is why you say you're in disrupt the entire value chain, and, right?
Absolutely.
So, but you know, media planners, obviously, I fear for them because it looks like they're really vulnerable. And you made a comment that, no, look, we're moving from madmen to mathmen, and then you guys believe it's no men. So, yeah. So talk us through that and scare the pants out of some of the drivers out there.
I think fundamentally, what do we believe in? Hmm. We believe that 90% of all marketing decisions should be data driven and should already, if not, have been happening inside advertisers and brands. Mm-hmm. Secondly, we also believe that if you look at the ad operations guys today in most of these agencies, okay, et cetera, they're running from campaign to campaign. In fact, AI is probably better at serving this. So your next big creative idea, your next big media plan, et cetera, should not be based on a hunch anymore. It's actually based on real insights and real customer data. So from that perspective, we believe everything will be automated, and we have to automate that. So in a utopian world, assuming there is a particular business objective that translates into a marketing objective, so from an all the database perspective, all of that is collected in one single place, and you should be able to figure out, how do I reach this particular customer segment through what channel, and then convert that into a digital customer journey and an audience intelligence system, and start automated media spends and move towards those channels that will give me the best ROI from that perspective. Mm. So all of this is actually better done by a machine than a human. And and this is where we think it's X-Men or no-men as opposed to math-men.
Math-men
is so, we say, 2015.
So 2015, wow, it's only 3 years away when, ago. Okay, but so you also have this rule about 110, right? And that's only that only applies to the creative process. Huh? And that sounds really disruptive. You can actually achieve that. Is this achievable, or is it just you guys drinking too much of your own Kool-Aid up there in the Axiata Tower?
So we have been doing this for the last couple of years now for a whole bunch of our customers. So what we think is the traditional creative agency process is fairly broken. It's basically operates in silo to the media planning. And this is where we want to break silos up. And the traditional creative development is very much more based on actually the next big idea of the next big TVC and then adapting that TVC into the digital world. I mean, that's fine maybe a few years back, but increasingly now it's a digital-first audience. So you've got to be developing creatives for the digital world, and hence you cannot be dependent on a creative that takes 4 months to develop. It needs to be almost weekly done. If you recall, a few weeks back, we had this this whole crispy chicken rendang discussion among consumers, right? Now, how many brands immediately picked that up and actually created creatives on the back end of that? So we have developed tools whereby you actually gauge what are the trending topics very early on, very quickly using machine edit videos and actually do new creatives and actually roll that out across the different platforms. And we don't think anybody should be spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on these creatives, and hence the 1/10 rule, 1/10 in cost effective, in speed and efficiency.
Wow, and it's because it's all machine driven, right? And also the ideas, I think you said, so it's easy for the client to, over a phone call, to just give you the green light, say, do this, right? So that's important also, because
correct,
you can be fast on your side. If on the other side, you say, oh wait, I got a call for a meeting with six people and one guy is traveling, that doesn't work, right? So
yeah,
the lower price point helps clients to make a decision fast also, right?
Absolutely. We actually think it is criminal to have quarterly plans. Wow. Okay. They need to be weekly plans.
Weekly plans, wow. It just sounds like everything just moving so fast, but I guess that's the reality of the world, right? And that's why you've come up with terms like hygiene video. I've never heard of I would think a hygiene video is where I think, you know, where it's a soap, you know, you're selling soap or shampoo or body wash, right? So now yeah, it's different. Is hygiene actually refers to the speed, is it, at which the process and a product, a messaging is created and then delivered?
Absolutely.
Or distributed, I know. Yeah.
Absolutely. For us, a hygiene video is you pick a topic, you actually get a video out there very quickly. But you have to remember that nobody's going to remember this beyond 2 weeks. So enhance. I mean, that is the life. That is the attention span of most digital natives at this point of time. So no point spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on a creative. It's about a quick one.
Then understood
and actually distribute it out.
Wow. So it's incredible. It sounds like what you're doing is just responding to existing behavior online, right? Where you say, you know, 2 weeks is the max period of people engaging with anything, then they move on. Normally, it's quicker than that. That's why you got to quicken the process in getting, you know, helping an advertiser get a messaging out there, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
So now, I think you mentioned also that you were in a pitch with like six other agencies, and then this movie chain picked you guys, right, to be their advertising agency, or was it digital agency or on choice? I don't know if you want to share the name, although it's in my article now, right? So
so essentially for this particular client, I think what when we go against traditional agencies, we bring in a breath of fresh air in terms of actually building media plans, et cetera, based on real insights and customer data. So the way we work is we look at real-time customer behavior. From that, we create audience intelligence. And from that audience intelligence, we have mapped out the customer journey. From there, then we can figure out how to actually create a digital execution plan and actually execute on the back end of it. So for this particular client, which you mentioned about, we could geofence the cinema locations, and we can check who is actually walking in, who is not coming in into this. We actually target them online, and we can also drive offline attribution to it, which is and online to offline attribution is really important, especially for retail clients. We also then bring in partnerships in terms of actually targeting people and actually giving them coupons when they actually walk in into the actual cinemas. So it's a whole host of stuff we are able to do using location, using data, using customer profiling, etc.
It's crazy as I listen to you talk. I said, wait a minute, this is a telco, you know, talking like it's a it's advertising industry native, and it's just crazy how you've crossed lines. You know, advertising guys listening are saying, guys, you guys have no right in being in our industry, man. What are you doing here, right? So it's just the nature of how these ecosystems are playing, where you've got untraditional competitors now, because you are exactly an unconventional, you know, competitor, right? And non-traditional.
Yeah, so essentially, we have looked at this value pool in the advertising value chain, and we've looked at what assets do we have as a telco that we can bring to bear in this world. And that was much more about the customer connection than the touch points that we have, as well as the customer profiling information for so long as we have customer consent to do that. And when we combine this, we are able to then look at the advertising value chain and how do we help with that, especially on their kind of digital disruption that's going on.
So end of story is that for an advertiser, they're saying that, you know, if even the traditional ad agencies can be as nimble, as fast as you all, it's great value for them, right? Because the cost of creating a message to target, you know, their market with a particular hook, which is something that's, you know, viral at the moment, can be just much quicker laid out, right? Instead of them having a meeting in-house and then coming to you and say, can you do this? You are the ones, hey, guys, you know, you can actually create a message around this theme or whatever. So you're not just sitting there and waiting for the agency or your clients to come to you, right? You're being proactive also.
Absolutely, yeah.
Wow, and at 1/10 the cost, you know, and the speed, which is quite insane. So very interesting how this whole, you know, digital ecosystem is playing out, and how unconventional, you know, and non-traditional competitors are coming into each other's spaces. So just hopefully you guys don't think you can do, you know, online digital media, tech news. Just leave that to the old farts. Right? But that's interesting. Okay.
That was Karamjit Singh's chat with Srinivas Gautam Neni. He's the CEO of ADA, which is the Analytics, Data and Advertising. We'll be right back with updates from or feature from Digirati 50. You're listening to Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back. This is Tech Thursday. I'm here with Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivam, and Chon Jin Seung from Digital News Asia. Karam, you want to feature another individual from your Digirati 50?
Yes.
This time around is Dr. Abu Hassan Ismail. He's the founder and CEO of Pestareang.
Pestareang, yeah. So, interesting guy. He is, in my opinion, the most successful academic who has become an entrepreneur. You know, I won't say in the history of this company, in the history of this country, but definitely since I've been covering tech, no other academic has left and become as successful as him. It's been a long journey. Of course, he left in the, you know, very early 2000s. But if you listen to him, right, he says that if you look at education, people think that going to university for 4 years is now obsolete. Interesting, huh? And he says that universities produce poor entrepreneurs. I think the psyche and maybe the culture and the system is not there to support an enterprise culture. So otherwise, you may get upset that who is this guy saying this, right? But he's an ex-academic, right? He's been an academic for 10, 15 years. So he's been in the system, he knows. Which is why he says that he tells lecturers that, you know, if you want to prepare students to be future entrepreneurs, prepare them with a pragmatic mindset. And he says that lecturers should actually form a company together with the students and in the process come up with an idea, pitch for funding and put real money at risk. He said that's where you get real learning for the students. Very interesting. And then he said he himself, right, he's wired up this way. I've never done anything well that I didn't do badly first. Very interesting. So he, but of course you learn from failure fast. So that's the kind of guy he is. And, you know, he's one of Digerati because he's a super cool guy. He's open to failure. Of course, he doesn't want to fail all the time. He says, also learn from other people's failures, la, right? It's a combination. But you've got somebody out there. And I think a lot of people... They're forcing me to speak within 90 seconds, but it's really
because
super stressing
we're
me out.
Just pressing for time. Today's show.
No, but so he's a Digerati 50 because, you know, he's been successful as an entrepreneur. It's been a long journey, but I think when we mention the name Prestariang, a lot of people will think of the Skin Project, which is the System Kawalan Immigration National. That's like a few billion. I think it's an article here. It's like a 3.5 billion ringgit, you know, 15-year concession to revamp the immigration system of the country. But if you look beyond what he's doing there, it's all these other things he's doing, you know, going to universities, talking to students and telling them how, you know, you want to be an entrepreneur, this is how you should do it, right? Not by going for an entrepreneurship class or even taking a master's in entrepreneurship. What is that about? Even I was a mass comm graduate. I know that you don't need to spend 3 or 4 years of your life studying and coming up with a paper that says you're a mass comm graduate. That's such a tragic waste of time and potential for anyone.
So, where can people get the Digerati
50? The article will be on Digerati 50. His article will be up tomorrow because we run our weekly Digeratis on a Friday. So you can read this article on Friday. Or if you've already downloaded, if you have already downloaded Digerati 50, you know, you would have read this story anyway.
But those who haven't downloaded it,
you can just go to our homepage, DNA home, digitalnewsasia.com homepage, and download it. And lots of amazing, interesting stories there. People who are being disruptive also, not just from the big companies, right?
So he's also in your BFF list as well?
No. I have no BFF list. Officially, I have no BFF list, okay?
All right. Okay.
Anusha, I'm going to sack her. I'm going to fire her. You'll never hear her again on the show. I'm serious.
That was Karamjit Singh, Anusha Kandasivan, and Chon Jin Seung from Digital News Asia. And today we've learned all about Karamjit's BFF list.
Non-existent.
We know who's on the list, who will be on the list, who he wants to be on the list, and who isn't on the list.
Hashtag not fake news.
Anyways, this has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Chakre!
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.